As we're heading headlong into summer, it's starting to get hot outside, and it's not just from the politicians talking. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principal Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Glad to be back with you, Barry. Sadly, it was a very short summer, wasn't it? Gosh, here we are in autumn already, and how long before the leaves turn yellow and fall off? Gosh.
Well, if the wind keeps blowing as much as it has and we get as much rain as we've been getting, it won't be long before those leaves will start turning.
Yeah, I just checked the Weather Channel. It's 60 degrees here. It's Thursday afternoon, about 2 o'clock, and it's 60 outside. So,
isn't it lovely? Yes.
And I'm not in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. I'm right here in my humble abode here in central Ohio. So, you know, you expect this. If you go up on the shores of Lake Superior in June, you get this weather. Normally, I've told my wife, we lived in Michigan for 11 years. I said, this is a very Michigan-y summer so far.
Spring
and summer. And she said, yeah, it really, really is. So those of you who've never had that pleasure, now, we also had some really hot summers. We had more, we said, but this is, when we were up there, we'd say, this is an Ohio summer, which means it was hot and humid and the wind didn't blow and it was uncomfortable. But I did hear you. You did make reference to political hot air.
Yes,
and,
I did.
You know, the gas emanating from both Columbus and Washington, D.C. should be enough to actually affect global warming, but apparently it isn't. Because even though we are cool, the Southwest is hot, and we're expecting to get some of that heat at some point, but really the gas emanating from D.C. and Columbus should be enough to keep us plenty warm here, but it's not working. I don't know why. Maybe it has to do with the gas machines are all kind of shut down trying to figure out how to respond to Trump, who seems to keep pinning them on the mat. They keep saying, we've got him now, and then the next thing, he's done a reverse, and they're pinned.
Well, you know, it's interesting you brought up that whole idea with the weather, because I've always said that there's a thermal bubble around downtown Columbus, and it's usually generated from all the hot air coming from the State House. Because if you look on, if you follow weather a little bit, and, you know, it's kind of a hobby of ours, you will see that when storm fronts, oftentimes when they come pushing through, especially coming from the west and tracking either up I-71 or across I-70, usually by the time they hit the outer belt area of Columbus, they break and they either roll north of Columbus, they roll south of Columbus, or they split in two.
I had to laugh. You know, when we lived in Lansing, we had the same phenomena. Mm-hmm. When I lived in Lansing, Michigan, weather, especially in the winter, these giant storm fronts would come in off the lake, and they'd get about one or two counties to the west of us, mm-hmm. and they'd split in half, and down in Jackson, they'd get, you know, 12 inches of snow, and up in St. John's, they'd get 12 inches of snow, and in Lansing, we'd get an inch, which was nice.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
Oh, yes.
But I know the phenomena you're talking about.
Absolutely. So, you know, you have that situation, and I'm sure D.C. has it, too. Now, D.C. being actually built on a swamp makes the weather a little more difficult there. And, no, seriously, not the swamp that's in D.C., but the swamp that D.C.'s built on. So you've got that going. Everybody has always said that Columbus itself proper is like was built in a bowl.
Which
and
it
so
is,
it's
yeah.
There's a depressed area around it, and I just, you know, you can make all those geological excuses you want, but when the centers of political action get going, it really can create a thermal bubble around the city.
You betcha.
But you know, you're outside that thermal bubble, Chuck. You know, you live out there in the countryside. I'm outside that thermal bubble, and really, the vast majority of Americans are outside these thermal bubbles. When you really look at, and I'm talking politically now. Since you brought up Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats and the fact that she and Chuck Schumer are basically sitting there with their hands firmly holding on to their aching, throbbing heads, wondering what Mack truck just hit them. And what we're talking about, folks, and you probably have heard about it, is that our president, the Trump administration, actually showed people in Washington, D.C., and I would argue across the world, that America is not backing down from what they believe is right. And I say that because, as opposed to all of the establishment figures, the political pundits, the intelligence operations, and the analysts that get paid big bucks for, you know, burning up your airwaves with a bunch of garbage, nobody saw coming what Trump pulled off last weekend. And what he pulled off, Chuck, was what I would consider to be a threat and a delivery. His threat was he made a public announcement that if Mexico didn't, the government of Mexico didn't start actively engaging on pitching in on this immigration issue and putting maybe some controls at their southern border, that the U.S. was going to respond by slapping tariffs on goods imported to from Mexico and exported to Mexico. Wow. And you know, this isn't like the same kind of tariffs that he was threatening China with.
No.
This is the kind of tariffs that basically really hurt. He was going to start at 5%. You're going to get a 5% tariff slapped on to Mexican, you know, products that are coming from or going to Mexico. We're going to get a 5% tariff. And he announced this on, well, a week ago, Chuck. It was Thursday of last week. He announced this tariff. And the tariff was set to start taking effect Monday of this week on the 10th. So basically, he was giving them the weekend to capitulate. And, of course, Mike Pence had been in Mexico. The U.S. ambassador had been a lot of people have been who have been working on this for a while, ever since the migration issue started happening in full force. Trump just basically said, listen, I'm tired of it. Here's the deal. You're either going to pitch in a real and significant way, or I'm going to start slapping a tariff on everything that comes in and out of your country. If you want to send people our way to put burdens on us, then anything we send to you or you send to us in an economic sense are going to get burdened. And, of course, as soon as he made the announcement, all of the politicos, the talking heads, the Chuck Todds of the world all started saying how dangerous a man he was and how this is going to wreck our international relations. And you
yada,
know,
yada, yada,
it,
yada, yeah.
Yada, yada, blah,
bloody,
blah, blah.
Bloody, bloody, blah, yeah.
Bloody, bloody, bloody. Well, the only people who didn't dismiss Donald Trump's threat was the government of Mexico.
Yes.
Who by Saturday night had agreed to sign an obligatory agreement with the United States to do exactly what Trump had told them that they had to do in order to avoid these tariffs. He announced it on Sunday morning in a tweet. The Sunday news shows were a bit, shall we say, caught flat-footed. So by Monday, Trump announces that we're not going to impose tariffs because Mexico has come to the table and they've agreed to things that the U.S. laid out that they needed to do in order to curtail this radical flood of Central American migrants coming up through Mexico and flooding the U.S. border. Now, I think it's funny because, Chuck, I think that maybe this is Trump's first card he's laying on the table to fulfill another campaign promise. Remember that campaign promise?
If is it the one about paying for the wall?
That's the one. I do believe that he's now got to a point where he's figured out their soft spot, and he will move forward on getting the completion of one of the biggest campaign promises he made, that he was roundly criticized and made fun of by not only Democrats, but by Republicans as well, especially the Never Trumpers, but even some of the, I want to ride the fence and not really step down on either side because I'm afraid that there might be a cow patty where I step on either side. you know, politicians who derided him because, oh, you know, he was living in fantasy land. He's mentally incompetent, Chuck. He's starting to lose his mental faculties because he thinks he can get Mexico to pay for a wall to keep people coming up from, you know, Latin America coming across the U.S. border.
Well, you know, at this point, one thing people don't seem to realize is that, you know, El Chapo just got convicted, right?
Yes, he did.
And his assets in the United States are forfeit to the government.
Yes.
How much is it?
It's billions.
It's billions. And that's the stuff on this side of the border. It's more than enough to pay for this wall. Is that not making Mexico, where a lot of this money got made, pay for the wall?
Well, absolutely. You're right. That's exactly what it does. But I believe that as we move forward here, there are things that Mexico wants, like access to U.S. markets, that Trump is probably going to try to, shall we say, take advantage of in order to move the agenda to get the government of Mexico to pay for the building of the wall. You know, because it's going to take tens of billions of dollars, although El Chapo might have had pretty much that kind of money, but you got to realize the government of Mexico is going to keep some of it. It really is very interesting because then you have this situation where, so Mexico signs this agreement with Trump, and who is the first person to come out and poo-poo the whole idea like it's some, you know, horrible fantasy? That's right, Nancy Pelosi.
As predictable as rain.
Yep, because what they're calling the Comprehensive Immigration Reform Deal that Mexico signed with Donald Trump. What this does, let's explain it a little bit. Not only are they supposed to like tighten up the Mexican southern border, but that there has to be what they call a remain in Mexico policy. So if a migrant tries to come across the border illegally, or they try to flood the border through the checkpoints, they are shipped back to Mexico, kind of in a holding pattern, until they can be sent to court hearings in the U.S. to determine whether or not they qualify for asylum seeking.
Exactly. It's for asylum seekers. And by the way, do you know what percentage of asylum seekers are denied?
Asylum seekers?
Yeah.
I don't know what the percentage is of denials.
95%.
Okay.
95.
I'd
have to do some serious research to verify that, but about around 95% are denied asylum.
Yep.
Because the claim's bogus.
Well, that's really the case, and I think the Trump administration knows that. But if he can get those individuals back across the border into Mexico and not sitting here either in a, you know, an assimilation center or shift out somewhere else in the U.S. until they get their court date, then, you know, that's a big win. It's hilarious because Nancy Pelosi jumps up and basically says, and I quote, "We are deeply disappointed by the administration's expansion of its failed remain in Mexico policy." I wouldn't call actually getting a bunch of people to stop crossing our border a failed policy, Chuck. But, you know, this is Nancy Pelosi, so, you know, it's her world. She'll do what she wants.
Yeah.
And she says that it violates the rights of asylum seekers under U.S. law. Okay, well, just because somebody is seeking asylum doesn't give them rights under U.S. law. That has to be adjudicated to find out if they, you know, it's an interest of the United States, if the asylum that they're asking for is based upon, you know, certain circumstances where they're being persecuted religiously, politically, et cetera. But if you just want to be coming to the United States because you're wanting to get a better economic situation, that's not a legitimate asylum qualifying cause. And so Pelosi is like basically, you know, she's threatening to try to block this policy. And I just have to laugh because when you look at the difference between Nancy Pelosi and Donald Trump, I always find it amazing that people, pundits, the politicos, the never Trumpers, whoever you might be out there, always talk about how they're worried about Donald Trump's, you know, grip on reality and his, you know, his mental health and blah, blah, blah. Nancy Pelosi is the one who seems like she's losing her grip on reality. This policy has already been reviewed by courts and found constitutional. And Mexico is offering jobs and health care to those who fall under the policy. That was part of the agreement. So it's really not a great position for Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats to find themselves in right now, in that Trump is starting to deliver on two more of his big campaign promises, which is, you know, protecting the U.S. borders and getting Mexico to pay for a wall. I think that's probably why that since Monday, I don't know if anybody else has picked up on this. I think you and I have picked up on this. Since Monday, there has been really very little hot air flack coming out of D.C. where even the Democrat presidential candidates are not rushing to try to, you know, beat up on Trump on these issues, because they realize he's delivering what he promised. And that puts them in a really, really bad position. But I guess Joe Biden solved that problem for the Democratic Party when he decided that, you know, if we elect Joe Biden president, he will cure cancer. I don't know if you heard that, Chuck.
Oh, Barry, we sat here and laughed. By the end of my term, we will have cured cancer.
Yes.
Well, which term? The one term you're going to be coherent for, if that long?
If that long.
And how do you propose to do that? We've been working on a cure for cancer for, a century and a half, to maybe going on two centuries, when it was recognized that people were having these tumors and dying. You know, cancer's always been around. But now we live longer, and so more people end up with cancer. And it's more recognizable in some cases. People have been trying to come up with way, you know, we've come up with these kind of barbaric methods of radiation and some forms of chemotherapy, and they're getting better and better and better and better at it. But cure for cancer, we don't even really understand what causes it. How are we going to cure it?
Well, those are details. You know, this is a campaign promise. Joe Biden is an establishment guy from the left. They can make all the promises they want, but you don't need to worry about the details, because they won't either after they get in. Which is the other reason why they're all flabbergasted and tongue-tied over somebody like Donald Trump, because he made campaign promises and he's still delivering on them.
He's still actually trying to fulfill them despite we've been hard on the Democrats. Let's be hard on the Republicans. One of the reasons that Trump didn't get the wall built and didn't get Obamacare repealed in the first 2 years of his term was because the Republicans in Congress sat
Paul
on
Ryan,
it. Yes. Yeah, Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell, virtually the entire House leadership package. Most, not all, but most of the committee chairs, especially the committee chairs that would have heard the legislation involved in getting those jobs done, essentially used the fact that Trump was under fire under a bogus investigation, thinking that he would probably resign before his term's over. And Barry, why did they think this? Why did they think that Trump might resign before his term was over?
Oh, there are a number of various conspiracy theory ideas about what they thought. But
one simple reason: every other Republican would have quit.
Well, that is true. That is true. With the amount of vitriol and pounding that they've been giving him, it is hilarious. I mean, you know, Pelosi, again, I think somebody ought to, you know, give her a psych evaluation. Basically says that she wants Trump in prison. You know, they're still screaming about impeachment, but nobody's got the intestinal fortitude to step up and file the articles. because they know that it's a losing deal now for the Democrat caucus. You impeach this guy right now, we're moving into 18 months before the election, you basically probably hand him the election, because the impeachment hearings will be a circus. The people will be polarized against the Democrats, who will be basically out there making fools of themselves, like they have under any other hearing that has been going on lately. And Trump will utilize that as the talking points for why not only you should reelect him, but you should basically send Pelosi and Schumer both packing into the hinterlands by sweeping in massive majorities in both the House and the Senate for Republicans. And he can pull that off. I mean, let's look at the Democratic caucus. I guess Joe Biden, we may have figured out how Joe Biden thinks that they're going to cure cancer, because they'll throw a lot of money at it, I'm sure.
Tons and tons and tons of money.
And where are they going to get all that money? Well, Bernie Sanders has the answer to that, because Bernie, who was on CNN of all things with Anderson Cooper, basically believes that, first of all, health care, and what he means by that is government funding of health care, is a human right. Now, Chuck, I know we have the right to life. I know we have a right to liberty. And I know we have a right to the pursuit of happiness. But I guess I missed maybe Thomas Jefferson's quill ran dry. Maybe he wrote it in invisible ink, and you got to like do the thing with National Treasure where you do the lemon juice and the heat in order to pull up the hidden message. But I swear, I've read over this now a few times, and there's nowhere in the Declaration or in the Constitution that I can see, and maybe I just can't read that secret handwriting, where it basically says that one of our rights is it's life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and universal health care.
Well, we all have the right to seek out the best health care available. That does not mean we have the right to have it provided to us. That there's a vast difference, and people get caught in that distinction, and I don't totally understand why, because it's easier for them. If they have a right to it, someone must provide it. Show the falsehood of that argument by saying I have the right to keep and bear arms, therefore someone must provide me with one. Not the way that works.
Well, here is Bernie's statement, okay? Like I said, he was with Anderson Cooper on his program on CNN, which I never watched, but, you know, I caught this on a feed. And basically, he says that, you know, he believes it's truly, I'll let his words say it, and I quote, "I suspect that a lot of people in the country would be delighted to pay more in taxes if they had comprehensive health care as a human right," period. He says, "I live 50 miles away from the Canadian border. You go to the doctor anytime you want. You don't take out your wallet. You have heart surgery, you have a heart transplant, and you come out of the hospital and it costs you nothing. Your kids in many countries around the world can go to the public colleges and universities tuition-free. Wages in many cases are higher. So there's a trade-off, but at the end of the day, I think that most people believe they will be better off when their kids have educational opportunities without out-of-pocket expenses, and when they have health care as a human right, and they have affordable housing, and when they have decent retirement security. I think most Americans will understand that is a good deal," unquote. Now, your take on that, Chuck?
It's fantasy land. It truly is fantasy land. Talk to anybody who is a victim of the Canadian healthcare system. Oh yeah, you can go to the doctor for a rash or something, and you get right in, you get treatment, and blah blah blah. Or you can have a baby, and you go right in, you get to have your baby. Heart transplant, good luck. Yeah, you get on the list. You're dead by the time the heart comes up, and they're ready to take you on. And that happens here too. But the fact is that the waiting list isn't like 5 or 6 years long. The same thing for non-emergency surgery. Any kind of elective surgery, like to have a rotator cuff repaired, prepare to wait and wait, mm-hmm, and wait and wait and wait and wait some more while you continue to have pain and be unable to use your shoulder because your rotator cuff needs to be repaired. Socialized medicine, means rationed medicine. That means after you're a certain age, if you have enough money in this country, you can get a liver transplant very, 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 very old. In Canada, there is a age limit. Higher education, free. There's no such thing as free. Again, when things are free, people appreciate them less. And from my understanding, it's actually harder to get into a Canadian college than it is down here. Why? Because it's free. And everybody on earth, you know, I want to get a college degree. Well, what do you want to study? You know, underwater basket weaving. Well, again, we have that here as well, but not that many people who actually have to pay for their own education want an underwater basket weaving degree. What do they want a degree in? They want a degree in something useful, computer information science. They want a degree in something that will get them into a master's program or a PhD program. They want something that they can use right out of college. That's why business programs are so popular, even though I took a couple of business courses and I found them laughably put together and taught and teaching theories. You know, if you've ever seen the movie with Rodney Dangerfield called Back to School, and he goes into take the business class from the guy with the English accent, and he lays it out for me, and he says, you know, you're going to make these widgets and the theoretical scenario, and then Rodney Dangerfield says, well, what are you going to do about your garbage removal? Oil? You got to talk to the Teamsters, and let me tell you who you're talking to when you talk to those guys. You know, that kind of stuff. It was all for fun. In Canada, they have to restrict quote unquote free tuition. So is it really free to go to college? No, because in the United States, you can go to college. Even if you had crummy high school grades, you can go to college. You won't get into Harvard because that's a private institution, but you can get into a lot of public universities.
Well, here's my take on this. I agree with you on the whole Canadian nationalized healthcare issue. Yeah, you can go to the doctor anytime you want, as long as you're willing to sit and wait for 8 to 10 hours or days or weeks to get in.
Yeah.
You don't take out your wallet. Well, it wouldn't matter anyway, because the tax rate in Canada to pay for all these things is so incredibly steep, you wouldn't have any money in your wallet. You're right about the heart surgery, the heart transplant. Just remember, if it costs you nothing, what is it worth, Chuck?
Yeah, it's worth very little.
Yeah, if that. And, of course, the college and university thing, it's like, okay, you are whistling past the graveyard because your wife was an administrator for a brick-and-mortar institution of higher education.
A very expensive one.
And brick-and-mortar institutions of higher education are starting to falter. Because, well, guess what, Mr. Progressive Socialist? Progress has moved forward to the point where people don't realize that they don't have to sit in a classroom for hours. They don't have to pay a bunch of room and board and tuition in order to get the same education that they could get otherwise, because we have what's called the internet. And you have places like Coursera and others that put up college level and advanced college level coursework that you can just download and do at your own, buy your books and do it at your own leisure. You know, you can have just as much technical acumen about a subject as anybody else coming out of a college. But, you know, honestly, Chuck, in the vast majority of instances with employment, book learning only gets you so far with a company. If you can't implement it and you can't use common sense to get around issues, the job prospects aren't nearly as great. You know, most employers, when they're reviewing people's resumes, they do look at where you went to school, if you went to school. But if you are between someone who just came out with an MBA from Harvard and an individual who's got 18 years experience working high-level finance, which one do you suppose they might take if they had a opening that they needed to fill for someone who could start right away and had to be detail oriented?
Not even a question.
Yeah.
They'd pick the guy with the experience, the guy or woman. It's there's, we say guy, but we mean anybody.
Well, yeah, I mean, it could be either one, so yeah. That's fine. And so this whole idea of tuition-free college, that's just to try to generate votes from
college students,
kids.
Yeah.
And this whole thing about, you know, universal health care, you know, he talks about, okay, he made this list at the end of this quote. Now, sending your kids to college without any out-of-pocket expenses, health care where you don't pay for anything, affordable housing, which I'm really questioning what his definition of the term
affordable is. What's the definition, yeah. Yep.
And decent, you know, they're talking all about this issue with, you know, Bernie says, you know, oh, you have a heart surgery transplant, you come out of the hospital, it costs you nothing. Well, it's a good thing it costs you nothing because you probably don't have any money in your wallet to pay for it to start with because it is costing you everything. But we'll get into that, too, because, you know, here he keeps going, Sanders, you know, this whole thing, he makes this whole list, educational opportunities without out-of-pocket expenses, that's not going to happen. And then healthcare as a human right, and I guess if it's a human right, then other people have to pay for it, Chuck. I guess that's what he's saying.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. You get to pick somebody else's pocket for your healthcare.
Yeah, and affordable housing. Well, define what affordable means to Bernie Sanders. I mean, honestly, in his socialist utopia, we could all live in Quonset huts, but, you know, that's not necessarily what people want to do or what would be best for them. And then he talks about decent retirement security. The problem is, you can't, and then he says Americans will think it's a good deal. Well, they might if they just are listening to the top level. And they like, oh, yeah, my kid's getting free college and, you know, I get to go to the doctor and not have to pay for it. And I get a free, you know, mansion or whatever. Bernie Sanders, I mean, honestly, if anybody's paying any attention whatsoever, is the biggest panderer on the face of the planet. Because if most Americans understand this plan for what it really is, what they're going to understand, it's anything but a good deal because you can get all these things that government will provide for you at the cost of you turn over everything you have to government. They determine when you go to that doctor. They determine when and if you get that medical procedure. They determine which schools and what programs and what degrees your children will have to go after. They will also determine that, you know, your right to health care ends when you stop becoming productive. Because obviously, if you can't pay taxes anymore, then you are just a draw on the system instead of a feeder to the system. So therefore, off you go, off you pop.
Which is why I mentioned before that there's an age limit for things like transplants and, certain kinds of correctives, even cancer treatment. There's an age limit after which you essentially it's starting to pop up here. After a certain age, people will start talking in terms of palliative care.
Yes.
And that's what, you know, that means basically they keep you comfortable until you die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's basically what it is.
Rather than prolonging your life. And I know what young people will say. Well, how long do you expect to live anyway? Well, 150 if I can pull it off. And the answer is, under a socialized medicine, I would definitely not be able to pull it off. You know, I have no illusions about living to 150. Because after, actually, God says that I will deal with a man, six score. He's at 120.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He says, and generally speaking, there have been a couple people in my lifetime who have lived to about 118, 119. But that's about it. So if, in case you don't know what a score is, there are people who don't, it's 20. So six score is 120 years old. But the fact is that, young people are in because we've kind of adopted pragmatism, are all for forcing people to retire or allowing them to die to get out of the way, is the way it's put.
Right.
Well, I, for one, do not want my 86-year-old mother to get out of the way or to die to in order to make a life easier for me. No, thank you. I'd like to keep my mom around as long as possible. If she wants to live to be 100, I want her to live to be 100.
Well, there you go.
And that's where this is leading. We're leading up. We're getting into what democratic socialists don't tell you is that these proposals are all highly pragmatic. They're highly ageist. They are prejudiced in favor of the young. And I might say the young and intelligent, because the young and not intelligent, at least according to government standards, which is what will matter, people who have not been deemed leadership material by whatever government agency will not be one of those ones who will be invited to partake of free government tuition. In fact, what will happen? Well, if you show an aptitude or show trainability, you might be sent to plumber school, or, again, not so bad in a free economy, plumber school, electrician, learn a trade, welding, that kind of thing. And again, I got nothing against those things. In fact, I wish I had a trade, because those are the guys that are doing real well right now. Some of the guys with college degrees are out learning how to weld. because they can see the handwriting on the wall, that tradesmen just simply do better. That's the old Soviet system method of doing it. You were evaluated as a youngster about how well you were going to do, you know, what track you would be on, and you were placed on that track. And any changes notwithstanding, you stayed on that track. If you were on college track, if you were on trade track, if you were on just worker bee track, you know. You'll never be anything more than somebody working a line on in a plant. Well, how do you know that? The answer is, in the United States of America, in a free economy, people can come out all the time who suddenly have an awakening and they're like, my gosh, I understand all this stuff all of a sudden, and they can go to college, and they can and be top of their class as an older student. Why? Because they're not so concerned about all the goofy things. You know, they're not concerned about partying. All they want to do is get their degree and get out.
Well, yeah, that's all they want. That's all they care about. But, you know, when it gets right down to it, Charles, we're getting faced with a very stark contrast leading into the 2020 election cycle. And that stark contrast is, okay, you have, on the one hand, you have a party and probably a candidate who will basically be promising you anything that your little heart desires. Free healthcare, free college, affordable housing, retirement security, cure to cancer, you name it. But they never tell you the costs. On the other side, you have an individual who is currently the president of the United States, you know, the seat where the buck stops here, who is not promising you all these things, but he's telling you, these are the things we need to do together to lift the country back up. We have to get manufacturing back in the country. We have to stop unfair trade imbalances because of most favored nation trading status. We have to be willing to impose tariffs in order to create market stability for many of our industries. We have to reduce people's taxes. We have to spur economic growth. And we have to do all that at the same time where we're unpacking regulations and getting rid of governmental overburdensome, you know, regulatory provisions. And he's telling you what it's going to cost. I mean, everybody knows that, yes, if we impose a tariff on Mexico, it's going to raise the cost of bananas by probably 6 or 7 cents a pound, you know. The question is, are you willing to do that in order to generate, you know, possibly, you know, jobs that pay $80,000 to $100,000 a year that you can qualify for? There's a stark contrast between socialist, Democrat socialist utopia, where government comes in and is the nanny for everybody and provides everything and wipes your nose and cleans your bottom, or there's the bootstrap, you got to be self-reliant, we got to work together, let's make this country great again agenda that the president has laid out and is trying to deliver on and has been with the most massive obstruction from both parties in the modern era. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a president, even Nixon when he was under fire, who has seen as much obstruction from not just his political opponents in the Democratic Party, but his political and personal opponents in his own party. I don't believe in the modern era we've ever seen anything like this, but in within all that, and I have to give him credit. Now, granted, there's a lot of things he's done or tweeted and things and said that I don't necessarily agree with. But
yeah,
he's keeping his promises.
Yeah.
And well, he's doing so even if it means he has to break some eggs and fire people from his own administration and take the shots from everybody else that, you know, oh, it's in, you know, he doesn't have stability and blah, blah, blah. These people are not loyal. Whatever. That's really what we're getting down to for the 2020 election. And the question is, who's going to be more motivated to come out to vote? Is it going to be the people who are promised everything and given a song and dance? Or is it going to be the people who are basically told, well, it may be some tough sledding, but when we get to the end of it, you're going to really appreciate where we are?
Look, we're in a situation right now where the same people that told us that Trump had no chance of winning the first time are telling us Trump has no chance at re-election. Citing approximately the same numbers and the same polls, Quinnipiac and, you know, all these guys. You know, you brought up a point. And I just want to Luke 14:28-30. This is the English Standard Version. For which of you desiring to build a tower does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. This is what we're being told. We're being told that we can build this tower even though we don't really know the cost. And we can begin to build it, which we did with Obamacare, but the fact is we can't finish it because it's so expensive. We can't do it. What do you think is going to happen when it's free tuition, free health care, essentially subsidized housing, all those things? All the things that basically other democratic socialist nations are beginning to walk away from. Why? Because they can't sustain them. Once again, even though that's not exactly what this Bible verse is about, Christ is using this analogy. And we're heading into this situation. We desire to build some of us desire to build a tower, and we have not sat down and counted the cost, and therefore we're opening ourselves up to mockery.
This is terribly true. But again, if Nancy Pelosi and company have their way, we'll just impeach the guy, and then the Democrats will have an easy skate to get into the White House by promising people everything under the sun and no responsibilities, because we all know that that's really what it's all about, right?
Well, look, how many candidates are still on the, I don't even know anymore. It was like 23.
26, I think.
Are we up to 26?
I believe we are.
And you know what? I couldn't name, I bet, more than six at this point. Every once in a while somebody, oh yeah, that's right, he is running for president. You know, it's one of those things. But they're all but a couple of them, and John Hickenlooper being one of the exceptions, and the guy, Chen is his name, I think, the entrepreneur from San Francisco. Both those guys are saying, let's hold back on some of these exorbitant promises, which is why John Hickenlooper and Chen aren't going anyplace. Because what they're trying, these guys are all busy trying to buy the nominations. They're doing their best to buy the nominations with Bread and Circuses, knowing full well that they can't fulfill the promises, but it doesn't matter because they're operating under the old paradigm. It doesn't matter if I fulfill the promises or not. The press will back me up and everyone will forget I made those promises. You've got the opposite going on with Trump. I'm keeping my promises and the news media is trying their best to make people forget that he made the promises. Because yep. It's bad for their chosen candidates. And you got guys like out there like Mitt Romney, who shame on you if you voted for him the first time, the time he ran for president, and tried to get me to vote for him, and I said no. Oh well, you know what that means. And I said, yeah, it means we'll get the same thing except with a D behind the name instead of an R, and we did.
Yep, that's exactly what we got.
But there, guys like him who are out there, I just can't believe the American people want this. You need to believe it. The fact is that this undercurrent has been there the whole time that the Republican Party was shoving guys like you down our throat. And that's the problem. That's why Donald Trump is so hated. He's keeping his promises. He's got a pretty good shot at being reelected. I'm not going to make a prediction that he's going to get reelected. My gosh, there's over a year left to steal the election in some way or another.
Yep.
And one of the ways they're going to try to do it is pack southwestern states with the illegal immigrants and get them registered to vote and do ballot harvesting. I mean, ballot harvesting is absolutely the most dangerous thing out there. It's ripe for fraud, and therefore that's why California allows it. That's why other states allow it. And very interestingly, that's why North Carolina doesn't allow it. And it did happen there. If you recall, there was a congressional candidate who won a seat there.
Yep.
By ballot harvesting. And a judge came in and said it was illegal. And they had to redo the election. And it turned out that he had much other issues.
Yep, it did.
Plus, then he had a stroke, probably due to the stress. And I think the Democrat ended up in that seat. Now, you know, whether that'll last or not. But yeah, if you don't know what ballot harvesting is, it's kind of a long thing to lay out. But essentially what happens is people come around and collect your absentee ballot. They come to your door. Oh, you don't want to go out on election day to vote? Well, here, let me register you to vote. And then in a few weeks, they come back and say, here's an absentee ballot, fill it out. Or do you want me to fill it out for you, although that is illegal? That is against federal law. But you and I both know, Barry, that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
Because some of those guys were going around. I can remember one president. There was a lot of trouble because Democrat activists, Acorn, if you remember the old Acorn, which supposedly ceased to exist and just basically now exists under different umbrellas. But Acorn was going to places like mental institutions and collecting ballots.
Oh yeah. Old age homes, mental institutions, you name it. Wherever they thought they could raise a vote from the dead.
Places with learning challenged individuals, any place where they thought they could harvest Democratic votes, they were doing it. And they were not, you know, they were not, I think there were a couple of accused cases where people that were comatose had turned in a ballot. That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of thing that's going to go on. You know, as much as the Republicans, they tried to make this Russia collusion case that, you know, all these Russians bought all these ads on Facebook, which I still laugh at, by the way, Barry. I saw some of that stuff coming through, and I was laughing at it when I saw it. Just ridiculous claims about stuff Hillary had supposedly done, and all these goofy things. that were being reposted. And I'm like, man, are you re-? I've called a couple people out. And I go, don't repost this stuff. It's junk. It makes you look like an idiot. Because it's so beyond the pale. It's so out there. It's not true. Well, so why are you reposting it? Well, because people don't have discernment. That's why.
That's true. That is true.
And that's why we could be in some trouble. That's why I don't predict a victory.
I see exactly what you're saying, and I follow you right along there. Again, that's the other thing, is the desire for people to take responsibility for their lives, make better, much better situation for themselves and their children and their children's children, but have to put a lot of hard work in and maybe have to pay a few higher prices at the, you know, at the pump or at the store or whatever it might be for a little while in order to make it happen. Or is the, I need all the free stuff and I need it now crowd going to be the ones who drive out the most votes? I mean, ladies and gentlemen, this is on our watch. This is up to us to decide what we're going to do. Because there really isn't much of a third option out there, is there, Chuck?
No, there's
not. I mean,
not.
You either have, we're going to be, you know, responsible and diligent and work hard, or we're going to coast and let everybody else cover it for us, except that everybody else is thinking the same thing about us.
Well, look, it's going to be, I honestly think third parties are going to have a really tough time in this election, unless the Democrats nominate somebody that's so far out on the fringe, which could happen. I mean, that's why I think Biden's the front runner, even though it's becoming obvious that he's not exactly the energy candidate. By energy, I mean personal energy. I mean, I listened to some diatribe he did the other day, and the guy says, look, I didn't touch any of these tapes. This is how it came out of his mouth. You know, I haven't altered any of these. And the guy sounded seriously like he was had too much cough medicine. This is why all of a sudden Elizabeth Warren, who again is an ultra radical, is in suddenly in second place with Buttigieg and Beto O'Rourke fading rapidly into the sunset. You and I predicted this. Listen, go back in our archives, listen to some of our shows where we predicted that this was going to be like whack-a-mole for a while. Head pop up, a bunch of stuff would come out, wham, head goes back down, another head pops up, same thing, wham, 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 as you go around, and then the first head pops back up. This is going to be interesting up until when are the Iowa caucuses? That's January, right?
I think so, yes.
I think so. Iowa caucuses are January, and even that isn't telltale. And even New Hampshire. All that does is give somebody let somebody bloody somebody else's nose the first time. Trump didn't do so well in New Hampshire, as I recall, but New Hampshire's not a New Hampshire's a purple state. You know, it's when you get into the tough slogs in the South and in the Midwest that really tell the tale. And honestly, I don't see any Democrat that isn't a moderate or at least has a reputation as a moderate doing particularly well in the Midwest and the South.
No, I'm not in this cycle, not at all.
I don't see Warren unless she builds some kind of weird momentum, but the news media is at this point is broken, and so their ability to create front runners is a little diminished from what it has been in the past. At least I think so. I could be wrong. And, gosh, you're more than welcome to tell me I'm wrong. Our folks out there in radio land, we invite that. Principledpolicy.com. Come on out and tell us if you think we're a couple of idiots and don't know what we're talking about. But go back and listen. I mean, we predicted whack-a-mole. And
yeah, we did, as a matter of fact.
And that's what we're getting.
Yes, it is. And again, it's one of those situations that I think it's they're not going to be able to help themselves because of running for president or for the nomination, that they're just going to go out there wider and wider and trying to blast Trump, you know, a concerted effort by the Democratic Party, which I think is going to, he's going to use fully to his advantage, and it's going to implode in their faces and for the good of the country, I believe. So,
well, listen, anybody out there who's listening, if you're relying on a politician to save you, stop. You need to be in prayer for your country. Is one of these candidates going to be better than the others? Yes. Who's going to win? God's choice. And if you don't believe that, was Barack Obama God's choice for president? Yes, he was. Why? We don't know for sure. He had something in mind because we know from Romans 13 that whoever holds the sword is God's anointed. And that's why some of the things that are being said on both sides when Barack Obama was president and now that Trump is president, some of the things that are being said by the opposition are simply bordering on the blasphemous, because you're essentially calling for, oh, there's all kinds of things being called for, death and destruction, and Joy Behar making comments the other day that she hoped that Trump died from a heart attack after eating too many cheeseburgers. And it was the same thing that got said about Clarence Thomas, if you recall. When Clarence Thomas got confirmed to the Supreme Court, there were pundits who actually put in print that they hoped his wife fed him too much bacon and eggs so he would die of a heart attack.
Lovely.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of rhetoric we've sunk to. Are we a divided country? We're badly divided. And I thought we were pretty divided during that period. Man, we are really divided now. Really, really, really.
This is true.
And what do we do about it as Christians? Christians are supposed to be trying to hold the pieces together. But that doesn't mean you surrender your position just to make things better. But you at least try to make sensical arguments. And again, that's exactly what didn't happen during some of the debacle. Now, you know, did this Russians buying these ads on Google and putting up fake posts, did it actually influence any votes? No, the people that voted that way and read those things and believed them were going to vote that way anyway. That's the dumb thing. This thing, how many, you know, ask anybody, Democrats, Republicans, how many votes were actually swayed by any of that? And the answer is zero. None. There aren't any. What it may have done is energize the base, which they may have a point, but I thought the whole point was to get as many people to vote as possible. I mean, that's what people calling for democracy want, as many people as possible to vote. Well, what they mean is as many people on our side as possible to vote, and as many people on your side to stay home or be suppressed from voting. Now, is there voter suppression? No, there's not. There's voter suppression only in the sense that we don't want people who aren't eligible to vote to vote. That's exactly what Stacey Abrams is talking about in Georgia. She lost by 40,000 votes. Well, if all the people that wanted to vote had been allowed to vote, I'd have won. Yeah, some of them who weren't qualified to vote, weren't registered, were turned away because they were not citizens or were not citizens of the state of Georgia.
Right. Well, you know, on the other flip side of that is if we went back and checked all the ones that did vote and eliminated the ones that weren't qualified to vote in some way or shape or form,
she'd have lost bigger than that.
You'd have probably lost bigger. So, hey, you know, that's the way it works.
Yeah. And sorry, guys. I mean, these are facts. This thing about Stacey Abrams being the legitimate governor of Georgia, come on, seriously. It's rhetoric. Create a narrative, push it until the thing either goes or crashes. That's the bottom line, and that's what we've got to deal with. But you know, we started off on a positive note that Trump's getting the job done, and that's what we want to continue. Keep getting the job done, and that's a positive.
Yes, it is.
And as we run out of time,
which I figured we were getting close.
Yeah, you knew we were getting close, and we are out of time. You know what we think about this. We want to know what you think about it. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.